morning. I'm Donna Quinn. And for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. First, a thank you to all of our listeners, all of our new members, everyone who called in during our pledge drive. Thank you so much. You allow us to continue to bring you public affairs programming, the eclectic music, everything that you hear on the station, which reflects and helps shape our community. Thank you so much. And in the studio today, I actually have one of our newest members. I have Minta Hafker. Come and say hello for a second, Minta. Minta is a brand new member. She's 9 years old. Say hi.
Hello.
And she will be listening to bedtime stories and a lot of other programming here and learning a lot. We're happy you're a new member. Thank you so much, Minta, for being a member. And today we're going to be talking about a timely topic. It's spring. There are baby animals around. And we are also going to be talking about what was on the front page of the Daily Historian on Monday about an eagle battle, because in the studio today I have Josh Sarampa. He is the director of the Wildlife Center of the North Coast. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Donna.
Very happy to have you here today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
I also have in the studio Karen Beck. Karen is the president of the board of the Wildlife Center of the North Coast. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Donna.
The Wildlife Center of the North Coast is a 501c3 organization which promotes compassion, empathy, and respect for all life through wildlife rehabilitation and ecological teachings. We're going to find out more about this incredible organization, which is right in our backyard here, and how valuable it is, what they're doing, their plans for the future, and how we can interact with wildlife this spring. Before we do that, though, let's find out a little bit about you, Josh. Please tell the listening audience about yourself.
Well, I'm a native Astorian. I graduated Astoria High School in 2010. I started volunteering at the Wildlife Center of the North Coast when I was 16. So that would be 8 years ago. I'm 24 now. What else is there to tell about myself? I'm now the new director, as Donna mentioned, at the Wildlife Center of the North Coast. Charnel Fee, the founder and director, passed away in September of last year. And we are carrying on with our duties there.
Mm-hmm, yes, her legacy. And we'll talk a little bit about how the Wildlife Center was founded when we talk a little bit about the organization itself. So yeah. Thank you, Josh. What's wonderful is that you grew up here, you were mentored by Charnel, you have a love for this, and we're just so fortunate because you obviously know the area, you know the wildlife, and so really, it's so great that you're the director. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And Karen Beck, please tell the listening audience a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a retired math teacher. My husband and I taught over in Eastern Oregon for over 30 years, and in 2002, we moved to this area. We were very excited to come here. And a year after coming here, I saw an article in the paper about releasing wildlife, and I thought maybe that was something I could do. I knew nothing about seabirds when I started. So since 2003, I've been coming. I work 2 days a week at the Wildlife Center and am now president of the board of directors, and we have a very active board right now, a very committed group of people. So I love working there, absolutely love. I feel it's my way of giving back to, I feel fortunate to give back to the environment.
And that is a wonderful way to do that, exactly, because without wildlife, our lives would be so diminished, no question. Josh, for listening audience who is not familiar with the Wildlife Center of the North Coast, what is it? How did it come to be?
The Wildlife Center of the North Coast is a 501c3 nonprofit wildlife hospital located just 9 miles east of Astoria on Highway 202. We take in, on average, between 2,000 and 3,000 animals, native wildlife, a year. With a roughly, I'd say, 50% success rate as far as releasing them back out into the environment. We specialize in seabirds because we're here on the coast. We're actually the only wildlife hospital located on the Oregon coast, and we're the only wildlife hospital in Oregon that specializes in seabirds. That said, we do, like I said, all native wildlife. We take in anything from hummingbirds to bald eagles, and then we also do beavers, porcupines, squirrels, chipmunks, bunnies. And we've had bobcats in the past.
And you've had deer as well.
And we've had deer as well. Mm-hmm. So we are founded by Charnel Fee. She founded the Wildlife Center back in 1997.
So it's almost 20 years old.
Almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she came into wildlife rehab kind of from, you know, she was a paralegal of 25 years and got right into wildlife rehabilitation. But she founded the center. She purchased the 105-acre lot that we operate on with her house and everything else on it. And she created very large, we have a relatively new state-of-the-art hospital that was built in 2007. It was built in 2007. So we are, grateful to everything Charnel has left for us. But yeah, that's
her legacy continues on with the help of volunteers, mm-hmm. with the help of donations by local community members and people from outside the area who want to keep the wildlife here in this area, you know, to rehabilitate injured wildlife, and also grants for larger projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we are a, like I said, nonprofit, but and we rely on volunteers. We are primarily, we're a volunteer-based organization. We only have two paid staff members, myself full-time and one part-time, what we call wildlife care technician, below me. And then everything else is, everyone else are volunteers. You know, the people that capture the birds for us are volunteers. The people that come in every day to clean cages and feed the birds and medicate the birds, they're all volunteers. We rely on our volunteers to operate. We would not be able to do without the volunteers. We also rely on public donation, you know, cash donations, in-kind donations of supplies. That's what, you know, also, I mean, without that, we would not be open. And we do, like you said, we do take grants for special projects. Our salaries, for instance, for the two staff members are paid for right now with a grant. And then some big projects, big enclosures, we pay for using grants that we write.
And really, when you say you have the state-of-the-art wildlife hospital, it is unlike any hospital you've ever seen because there's a lot of water.
Yeah. Because we're a seabird facility, we have, it's a very wet environment. You know, our volunteers come in their rubber boots and they're, you know, they're wearing plastic aprons to keep themselves from getting wet and dirty. But yeah, it's a lot of water. We use a lot of water in that facility, and we're not on a well. We're on city water, so.
Oh, that all adds up. And Karen, you said you love being there and you work there a couple of days a week, meaning you volunteer there a couple of days a week.
Right, twice a week. I think it's important for the public to know, though, that volunteering, that it's not working at the center itself in the hospital is not for everyone. You get dirty, and it's not the easiest job sometimes for some of us. It's strenuous. However, we need volunteers in many, many aspects. We need drivers. We need people to come and pick species up that are injured. And so I think that's important for the public to know, that there's different ways of volunteering.
Well, you have a mission, actually, which is to rehabilitate wildlife. I know there are some animals, you have some raptors, mm-hmm. who could not be rehabilitated. So therefore, they live at the center, and then they become your educational program birds.
Right.
Because you go to schools with these birds, and you educate students about this.
Yeah. So we do. We are permitted through Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. In order for us to keep wildlife, we have to have these permits. It's against the law, otherwise, for general public to keep wildlife in their home without these permits. And so we have we do have permits to keep these things, and the ones that we want to keep for educational birds that we that we have decided are suitable for education programs, suitable for captive life. We go through a permitting process to get them permitted legally with us to keep forever, and then we do bring these birds. They never get released. They live out their days with us, and we bring them to educational programs such as classrooms or state parks to do educational programs. So.
Well, obviously, the goal would be to, if you have an injured bird who's maybe hit a power line or something or been hit by a car, is to rehabilitate that bird and release that bird back into the mm-hmm. wild. What are most of the accidents? Who are you rehabilitating? I mean, what kinds of animals are you rehabilitating, and what are the issues that bring them to you?
Well, the seabirds that we get are primarily, a lot of them are very, they're starved, or they've been washed up by a storm. So people finding birds on the beach, it's important for them. I think one of the biggest problems we've had with that is they'll call us and then they leave. And so it's important that someone who finds a bird or an injured species on the beach is to stay with the species until a volunteer can come to that point, because we could be driving up and down the beach and never find it. And then the other injuries that we see are like power lines, car strikes, wind storms where they're blasted into someone's home or into their yard. And then that individual needs to know how to contact us.
And of course, we get, cat caught by cat, and that's not a natural predator. So that, as far as we're concerned, is a human-caused injury. So we get cat caught, dog caught, window strikes, everything. excuse me. So the best way to contact, the best way to contact us is by our phone number. Just give us a call. Someone will answer and we'll walk you through it. And our phone number is 503-338-0331.
And the website is coastwildlife.org. The actual organization name is the actual organization name is Wildlife Center of the North Coast. However, the website itself is coastwildlife.org, and you can find out a lot more information about that. So in addition to the hospital, the educational programs, you obviously you do some volunteer training, and you are always looking for volunteers, so there's an opportunity for people to do that. You've had some amazing success stories of rehabilitating animals of all different types. Although, unfortunately, on Monday, in the Daily Historian, there was a front page article, Eagle Dies After Attack by Rival. There's a picture of you, Josh, running to get the eagle. Maybe the listening audience would like to know a teeny bit more about that situation, please.
Yeah, so Friday morning, I got a call from someone at the Nakanakum Estuary there in Gearhart that said that there was an eagle that was on the ground and another eagle is attacking it. And typically, you know, we get these eagles get in a fight, and they're fine. They fly off. But I told the guy, okay, I'll be right there. So myself, along with a volunteer, Lynette Scribner, who's in the paper as well, we left right away with our net and our gear. Got there, and sure enough, there's a pretty bedraggled-looking bald eagle sitting on a stump. First thing I did was started walking toward him to capture him, and he flew off. He flew, you know, just fine, it seemed. And so I originally thought, well, I'm not going to catch him. Went after him again, he flew off. Went after him a third time, he flew off. The fourth time, I decided this is going to be my last try. If I can't catch him, then we're going to go home. So I had Lynette kind of flank him, so to speak. And he flew off over the river, and they landed in the river in the shallows. And that was kind of our opportunity. I was able to run out there with the net and catch him. Once we got him to shore, I had Lynette hold him. I looked him over kind of briefly just so I could tell the people that found him what I think is wrong. And he was pretty battered by the other eagle, lots of cuts and bruises, and but also he was incredibly skinny, which is very strange. It's abnormal for a mature bald eagle to be skinny. Those birds eat everything, and they're not going to let themselves get skinny. So then I started thinking that there's some sort of underlying issue. We brought him back to our facility, put him in an enclosure after giving him some fluids, and he instantly sat there, leaned his head against the wall, and closed his eyes. And that's, you know, that typically, so bald eagles, it's too common for bald eagles to have lead poisoning from eating prey that, you know, had, like if they ate a squirrel that someone shot with a lead bullet of some sort, then they get lead poisoning and they die. It just takes a tiny bit of lead to kill an eagle. So I thought lead poisoning. We drew blood, we sent it to Portland Audubon, who tested the blood for us, and they came back and said it's negative for blood, or for lead. But the eagle had died overnight. So the eagle died that night that we brought him in, and myself, along with our veterinarian at Bayshore Animal Hospital, Lisa Lewis, we did a necropsy on the eagle, and aside from internal hemorrhaging, which is normal for an eagle that was thrown to the ground from the sky, we found some signs of underlying issues, underlying illness with his respiratory system, which could have caused, we don't know what it is exactly, but we know that's probably what was causing him to decline physically anyway. And then, of course, he flew through the wrong territory at the right time, so to speak. And eagles this time of year are very territorial. They're building nests, they're nesting, you know, and they're doing their mating rituals, and so he just caught that.
So he was in a weakened condition. He had an underlying problem, mm-hmm. and then he was unfortunately caught by another eagle, mm-hmm. and so that obviously led to his demise. But you were there to try to save him if that could have happened. If he had not had those underlying issues, that could have happened. Because I know when I've in the past had you on the program and I've had Charnel on, there are some incredibly rewarding stories of injured animals who, with the tender, loving care of the veterinarians you work with and your volunteers, the medicines, the chance to be healed in a healthy, in an environment which is not stressful, to release them is just a glorious experience. Mm-hmm. So I so salute you for the work you do. It's so vital and important.
Thank you.
Our lives would be incredibly diminished without wildlife. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. And today we're talking about the Wildlife Center of the North Coast, which is located just about 10 miles away from Astoria, Oregon. It's the only wildlife hospital on the entire Oregon coast. They mostly work with shorebirds and birds in general. However, there are also mammals. And today in the studio, I have Josh Sarampa. Josh is the director of the Wildlife Center of the North Coast, and I also have Karen Beck, who's the president of the board. With losing Charnel, and I'm sure that was a blow, you and maybe didn't have as big a board, you've had to restructure, you've had to relook at, you know, how are we sustainable? What does the future look like? Can you talk to us a little bit, Karen, about some plans for the future for the Wildlife Center of the North Coast?
Well, what happened is we went from a very inactive board, actually. Charnell was kind of a jack of all trades and did a lot of things all on her own without any help. And so that's what we relied upon. So stepping from there to a new board, our board is now a nine-member board. They're very committed people. And we have now in the works a five-year plan, which will involve everything from financing to doing something new with our structures. We just now had all our trees trimmed, and they're all up to snuff to being safe in the area next to some of our buildings. So we have a lot of projects lined up for us. So it's very exciting right now to me because Josh here has, as a very young person, I think he has some really innovative ideas for the center. And he just sparks with ideas as far as I'm concerned. So I think we're really fortunate to have him as director. Our assistant director, as I call her, our wildlife technician, she is just a wonderful gal. She's new. She, too, is very committed. So I think it's just very exciting to come out there right now.
Well, this is a very important time for the Wildlife Center of the North Coast, then. And I know that one of the reasons that you wanted to be here today, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you here as well, is because it's spring. What do we need to know about baby animals and about what's happening during this time of year?
Well, yeah, so springtime is kind of a really busy time for us because we get call after call after call about, oh, I found this baby bird, I found this baby bunny, or I found this baby fawn, for instance, baby deer that's laying here, mother's nowhere to be seen. And so a lot of our time is spent talking to people, trying to solve the problem over the phone. A lot of our rehabilitation is done during the spring over the phone. Actually, a lot of the best, Bob Salinger with Portland Audubon, he has a great quote, which is, the animals we help best are those that never come into our facility. Because these baby birds that are potentially coming in, you know, we can't raise a baby bird as well as mother can, right? The mother bird is way better at it than we are. And so we do our very best. If someone finds, for instance, a baby bird on the ground, if it's not a fledgling, if it doesn't have feathers, we ask the person first, can you find a nest? So, you know, the first thing to do when you find a baby bird, for instance, is look for the nest nearby. If you can see the nest and if you can reach the nest, place the bird back.
Because we've all been taught that right. If you find a baby bird, and even if the nest is close by, if you touch it, then the mother will not accept it because there will be the human smell. Yeah. So you're saying that's not true.
That is not true. That's an old wives' tale. Most birds do not have a sense of smell. And so mom bird, if you know, she'll still care for her baby if it's still alive.
So if you find a baby bird on the ground and you see a nest, you can go ahead and take the baby bird, put it back in the nest.
Right.
Okay.
And but on along those lines, a fledgling is different. So a nestling that's pretty much naked goes back in the nest. If you find a fledgling, which is a bird with its eyes open, most of its feathers covering its entire body, and it's hopping around, but obviously baby, that bird doesn't need help. Fledgling birds actually spend 3 to 4 days on the ground before they learn how to fly. They don't jump out of the nest flapping their wings flying. They spend time on the ground learning to fly, and so we always tell people, you know, we get a lot of calls like that too, where people are saying, oh, we found this baby bird just hopping around on the ground. And then we'd ask them to describe it over the phone to us. We say, oh, well, that's a fledgling. Put it right back where it was because the parents are feeding it while it's on the ground.
And the parents are watching. You may not see them, but the parents are watching because one of the biggest problems is that people think that the animal is abandoned, and then they take them, and then they are separated from their parents, and they will not thrive.
And we get a lot of calls, too, where people say, well, there's cats around. A cat's going to get it. Well, we do our very best to... you know, these baby birds, if we take it away from cats and never see a cat in their life, they're never going to know what a cat is, right? So then we throw it back out in the wild, and it goes running up to a friendly cat, you know, right? So to an extent, some of this the bird has to learn on its own, has to learn how to hide from the cats in a bush. And so that's why, like I said, we can't raise them as well as a mother bird can. A mother bird will teach the baby, you know, that's a cat, that's a predator. We need to be fearful of that.
Okay.
Another thing I wanted to mention about the baby birds is all native birds are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which what that act says is that you cannot harm, possess, or keep any part of a native bird. And so that means that goes for nests, too. If you have a nest, say, above your door, a barn swallow is building a nest over your door, you can tear that nest down all you want until that first egg is laid. Once the first egg is laid in there, that's considered an active nest, and then it's against the law for you to touch that nest.
Okay.
And so, you know, we tell people, if people say, well, there's a bird building a nest by my by my front door, who said, well, if there's no egg in there, tear it down, you know, and just keep doing that until the bird quits coming by. So we recommend that people, before they do their spring trimmings in their hedges and trees, we ask, and, you know, before they burn pile stuff, because mammals, baby mammals are in bird piles sometimes, we ask that you check for nests first. Make sure you're not going to be, you know, chopping up a little bird nest.
Okay, that's all good. I hadn't thought about that. Okay, the burn piles. Okay, so baby birds, and again, look in the hedges, and just before you just go out, just be careful, be observant, be mm-hmm. aware, and look around. Mm-hmm. Okay?
And we get a lot of calls, too, or we have in the past, where people patch up a hole in the side of their house up by the eaves that's, you know, from the winter damage. They patch up this hole, and the next thing you know, they have baby birds that were locked in there, or baby mammals. Baby squirrels will use holes, they're cavity nesters. They'll have their babies in there.
Well, how do you deal with that? Okay, so how would you find out if you have them before you patch the hole?
You would have to go, you know, take a flashlight, look through the hole, see if you see anything, or monitor the hole, see if anything's going in and out of that hole. And then the best thing you'd have to do is try to find a way to get those things out of there.
Okay.
And, you know, contact a wildlife rehabilitator like us.
Okay. So you can help with that kind of situation, too.
Mm-hmm.
If, like, there are some trapped birds or little chipmunks or squirrels mm-hmm. or something, you know, then call you. Mm-hmm. And you can help deal with that. Great. Okay.
And then I'll put out there as well, during baby season, we have a lot of patients and not enough help. So we always need volunteers that want to help feed baby birds in our facility, feed baby mammals in our facility, because that's around the clock.
So right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening right now, it's spring. Josh has just said that if you want to help feed baby birds and maybe some baby mammals, this is your high season time. Mm-hmm. So what's the number for people to call you on?
It's 503-338-0331. You can also contact us on our website, the email. And then we're also, you know, we have a Facebook page that we respond to messages on there as well.
Okay. So if you have some time, and maybe you just moved here, but if you have some time and you'd like to volunteer, the spring is a great time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right. What else do we need to know about wildlife? Because I know that one of the things I always think about is just be respectful. You don't try to catch something. If you find something, you know, leave it alone. Be respectful. Mm-hmm. What other things do we need to know as we interact with wildlife in our lives daily or on a trail somewhere?
Well, fawns. Fawn season mm-hmm. will be coming up, too, and it's important for people to know that when they come upon a fawn and it's by itself, the mother has not abandoned it. It is out looking for food, and oftentimes they'll say, well, it's not getting up and laying down. Now, one of the things fawns do is it's an instinct. If they see danger or if they feel threatened, they go down immediately to the ground, and they're going to stay there, hopefully. So if you remove that fawn, that mother is going to be terribly upset trying to hunt and hunt for that baby. So that's one thing that's important to people, public, to know, is please do not remove that fawn.
Okay.
Call us and we'll walk you through it, but do not go up and try to pick that fawn up.
Okay.
And, again, if you find injured wildlife of any kind, we don't recommend that you feed it, especially when we're talking about baby mammals. A lot of the time we get people that say, oh, well, I've been feeding it cow's milk, you know. Cow's milk will kill most mammals. You know, if it's not a cow, it's not supposed to have cow's milk, you know, unless you're a person. Basically, if you find injured wildlife, like an injured red-tailed hawk in your backyard with a broken wing, the best thing we can ask you to do, or what we try to get you to do, is capture the bird the best you can. You know, you wear appropriate protective gear if you can. You know, like raptors, you need to wear gloves, leather gloves.
Maybe use a sheet or a pillowcase.
A sheet or a towel.
Or a towel or something, or a sheet.
So wrap it around the bird, put it in a cardboard box, a ventilated cardboard box. Put it in a warm, quiet, dark, stress-free, as stress-free as you can give it. Stress is like a leading killer of injured wildlife. They'll get stressed out because we're a giant predator to them. Put them in a stress-free location and give us a call. Don't offer it food or water. Just give us a call, and then we will do our best to get someone.
I know. That's what's so great. What a resource you are. You're like 911 for – you are 911 for mm-hmm. wildlife, for injured wildlife. That's what you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other things do we need to know about?
Well, That's a good question. Well, I mean, there's all kinds of things.
Yeah. Okay. Just because we only have a few minutes left, mm-hmm. so that's why if there are some other things that you want the listening audience to know, we have a few minutes left. So,
well, again, we need volunteers. I mean, that's what we would. That's a big thing we want to get out there. Is that we're always need volunteers. We're always need donations. Certain items that we can take as a donation for baby season, for instance, we use formulas and insects for our baby birds. And so that's, you know, we need mealworms, crickets, waxworms. We need a bunch of different supplements. And so we just posted this on our Facebook page. But if you want to make a donation that's not cash, but something that's very direct for the care of the songbirds, you can make a donation of gift cards to pet stores locally. That's how we get our insects, you know, is from the pet stores. So gift cards from pet stores. You can give us gift cards at Fred Meyer, Costco, places we can get our supplements, or health food stores if you have gift cards there. Or you can contact us directly. We could tell you which supplements we need over the phone. You know, again, that phone number is 503-338-0331. You can give us a call. We can tell you what supplements we need, and you guys can make those donations to us as well. It's very expensive raising baby birds, you know, because they eat a lot, and they have to eat every 20 minutes around the clock, basically. And so those are some donations you can make. And, of course, if you just want to make a general donation to help all of our wildlife, cash is always good.
That's great. And, you know, I remember on a previous show we talked about the fact that birds have personalities, mm-hmm. that you really notice, whether it's seagulls or pelicans or songbirds, birds have personalities. Mm-hmm. And you get to know them as individuals, actually, which is really interesting. Karen, what other things would you like the listening audience to know in these last couple of minutes we have?
Gosh, I can't. Really, the only thing I would like to stress is we're always in need of help, whether it's volunteering or donations. And I can't stress that enough. And sometimes it's best if you call us and say, what do you need? How can I help? And if
at
you just
this
make
moment
that,
in time. Yeah.
Sure. If you make that phone call, we can say, we're in desperate need of bleach or Simple Green, different products that we use for cleaning.
Exactly. And it's a joyful thing to give to this because, again, it's such an important thing you're doing. And Terry Wilson, you want to say something?
Well, I've got a question. I think I know the answer. You do not encourage visitors out there because you're very busy.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. We are our permits also don't allow us to have tours of our facility. We're not supposed to let the public and our rehabilitation animals be in contact with one another, mm-hmm. visual contact or otherwise. So if you want to see the rehab animals, you have to volunteer is kind of the rule. Otherwise, you just contact us. We can tell you when we're having our next education program. You can see our educational ambassadors.
Because you do have educational programs mm-hmm. where people can see some of the birds. Or, again, you can volunteer, and that gets you right mm-hmm. there into the facility.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you both so much. Really valuable,
welcome.
Important work that you're doing.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're glad you had us here.
Totally. This is one of my favorite organizations because, again, wildlife enriches all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so thank you very much for the important work that you're doing. So, again, you can go to their website. It's coastwildlife.org. You can call the number 503-0331 and ask, you know, hey, I have a little time or I have some resources. What do you need? How can I be involved? How can I help wildlife?
Right.
So I love your idea of giving back to nature, which gives so much to us. So, and I want to thank so much Minta Hafker for being here, our newest member of Coast Community Radio. She's 9. She's going to do some exciting things here in Astoria with her parents, Bong and Chris. So thank you so much for joining. And thanks again to all of you who contributed during our pledge drive. A big shout out to Terry Wilson, our engineer extraordinaire, and my gratitude to talented local banjo instructor Michael Brunn for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. In this busy, busy world, we forget to breathe and the news can be overwhelming. Take a deep breath. It will help everything in your life. And then focus on the things that are working well in your life. There will always be those things that aren't, but focus on those things. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment, the only moment which exists, the now moment, on the amazing planet we call Earth.